Baton Rouge residents were evacuated from their homes, and some even lost their lives in the recent flooding. Many observers across the U.S. thought two words: climate change. That's because climate models predict record-breaking rainfall and increased flooding for the South and other areas of the country. And there's no question that living by the ocean in the era of climate change is a risky proposition. As sea levels rise, homeowners are faced with few choices. Try to live with more and more flooding, try to protect their homes, or maybe pull up roots and head somewhere else. Sam Evans Brown, host of New Hampshire Public Radio's podcast Outside In, has this story about how, when it comes to making these wrenching decisions, coastal homeowners are basically on their own.
Nahant, Massachusetts is a rocky crescent moon of land out in the Atlantic Ocean just north of Boston. For its entire history, it's been at the mercy of the ocean. To get to the town back in the 1800s, you would cross a long, beautiful beach at low tide that connected it to the mainland. At high tide, you had to take a boat. These days, there's a four-lane road built on that beach, and it sits just a few feet above high tide.
When the weather's good and in the summer, there is no prettier, nicer place. We have a private beach. We have a great view. The shipping lanes of Boston come right in front of our house. So all the big ships that come in, we can see, and I love it. I love my house.
Dave Lazaro is a retired bartender and a woodworker. The house he shares with his wife, Chris, is full of his carvings. It's kind of a comforting nautical clutter. He and Chris have lived on Willow Road in a house that at high tide is a stone's throw from the water for nearly 50 years.
I raised a family here.
Yeah. When Dave first moved here, did you tell him? He was the only one here all winter. Imagine that. They all lived in another town. It cracks me up.
I was the new kid on the block. Now I'm the old man on the block.
Waterfront property tends to be expensive because it's nice to live by the water. More than 120 million people live in counties on the United States coast. That's more than a third of the country. But anyone living on the water knows you get the beautiful summer days, but also the brutal storms.
The Mail of the Year says that city is virtually underwater, about a third of it anyway, with high waters forcing...
There are two storms that people who've lived in Nahant for a long time talk about. The blizzard of 1978, and what everyone here calls the no-name storm in 1991. If you live anywhere else, you probably know it as the perfect storm. They made a movie about it.
When a storm comes in, the house shakes. You can literally feel it. And when those big waves hit the seawall, you can see movement. And the blizzard of 78, I had put plywood up in front of the windows, but when that got knocked in, there was waves carrying 4x8 sheets of plywood through the living room, and if one of those had hit, we would have had broken bones or been underwater.
As the seas rise, climate scientists predict devastation like this will become more and more common. Higher seas mean even a less powerful storm could push the tides up over Nahant's seawalls. Sam Merrill works with GEI Consultants, an engineering firm that designs coastal infrastructure.
The unfortunate thing is what we're really facing in so many of these coastal areas is what you can rightly call an extinction threat, the extinction of a community. And we don't know how to deal with extinction. It's not really a conversation in our public sphere.
He spends his days grappling with the enormity of this challenge.
You always have three options: fortify, accommodate, and relocate.
Fortify, accommodate, relocate. In other words, you can brace for things getting worse, you can try to adapt to live with the occasional flood, or you can abandon your home and flee. If this sounds like a simple choice, try spending some time in a place like Nahant, a place where real people are staring this in the face. When you do, each of those options gets a lot more complicated. Let's start with fortify, stay and fight. In a place like Nahant, you can see this just a few doors down from Dave Lazaro.
Hey, how are you?
That's where Ken Carangelo lives. He's single, no kids, and an executive at a big company in the film industry. He and his neighbors each own a section of an interlocking seawall. Carangelo's was built in the 90s after the perfect storm undermined the old wall. It's pretty imposing, tall enough that you can't reach the top of it from the beach, and even more concrete is buried under the sand.
And everything that's down there has a solid footing and Kevlar-coated rebar, so the salt doesn't get to it as much.
Ken bought this house in 2008, but he says the seawall cost the previous owners more than $200,000.
And the whole length of it, you know, it's the equivalent of building a sandcastle, and you kind of know what happens, you know, after a while. The ocean will do what the ocean is going to do. Depends how hard you want to fight it, I guess.
Plenty of people in coastal communities believe the federal government should help to pay to protect these sandcastles. And that's true in Nahant, too. One local official told me he thinks the Army Corps of Engineers should put a breakwater in Nahant Harbor. But Sam Merrill, the coastal engineer, says the cost of protection, especially if you're trying to protect every building from every storm in every community in the country, we're talking about spending billions every year for a century.
Well, I don't think it's feasible to protect every community.
So how about accommodating? The second option on our list, trying to live with the flooding, find ways to let the water flow in and out without causing so much damage. In Nahant, they're trying that too.
Seawalls can only do so much. You're not going to stop the Atlantic Ocean.
Enzo Baril is a local elected official. He grew up here, owns a garage in town, and can point out where all the families of mobsters used to live.
Right here.
He gave me a tour, pointing out newer houses that have been built to withstand moderate flooding. The biggest accommodation Nahant has made is to keep a lot of its low-lying areas out of development.
And it's open space, can't be built on, helps us keep our, you know, keep our costs down.
And there's even this pond at the low point of the town's golf course. When storms come, they put these giant bilge pumps in to drain the town.
So we actually drain the town down. Before we know there's a major event going to come, Northeaster, we drain it right down.
But despite the seawalls and the open space, Nahant has some of the worst flooding in Massachusetts. What's more, nearly 50 homes in Nahant are places called repetitive loss properties. These are buildings that have had more than two flood insurance claims in the past 10 years. Kind of the definition of having your home in a risky spot. These homes make up something like 1% of all buildings covered by flood insurance administered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. But that 1% puts in nearly 40% of the claims. If you think of it in healthcare terms, this is kind of like the chronically sickest patients going to the doctor again and again. But the doctor can only treat the symptoms while the disease itself is just getting worse. But unlike healthcare, it does seem like the natural question is, when do you just give up on these homes? Ask families to move somewhere safer, higher up. Even Enzo Baril, a lifelong Nahanter, thinks there's a point after which you shouldn't get paid to rebuild a home in a spot like this.
Where do we draw the line? I don't know. I think that, personally, I think that once FEMA has paid you, and if they've paid for your home, you've lost it, because it's in a ridiculous spot, enough's enough. We have to just say no, because the country is paying for that now.
So, relocation. Just move. That third option on our list, maybe more than the others, seems so simple as a hypothetical. But in real life, it's not even close. Consider Dave Lazaro, the retired bartender who likes watching the ships go by. His home on Willow Road has been flooded 6 times over the past 40-some-odd years. He doesn't question that the seas are rising.
Storms are getting more intense, and there are places where once you can live, that now you can't live. I don't think of Willow Road that way.
And that's the thing. Nobody feels this way about their own home, even if, logically, they know the odds.
Is this house going to be safe here in the next 25 years? I'm not sure about that, you know. Because I think that those storms that come in, if you're in the path, you're in trouble.
When you're talking about other people's houses by the sea and how risky those are, it's much easier to distance yourself and look at the facts. When it's your home, the view gets blurrier. So this is where flood insurance comes in. The price that people pay should be a signal, a clue that sooner rather than later, you will be in trouble.
Do you guys think you could live here without flood insurance? Do you think that like you would take that risk?
No.
Yes.
See, even in one household, figuring out where and when to draw the line is complicated. The signal that flood insurance sends gets all mixed up in your love for your home. And that only gets messier the more families you include. Just as an example, Many older, riskier properties covered by federal flood insurance are grandfathered in to getting artificially low rates. After Hurricanes Katrina and Sandy left the program $23 billion in debt, Congress tried to raise those rates. Coastal property owners reacted immediately, filling their representatives' inboxes and voicemails with complaints. Members of Congress, like then-Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu in 2013, fought to keep the subsidies.
This is a major bill that passed without the data necessary to use either compassion or common sense. Okay? Compassion and common sense.
Less than 2 years after the reform was passed, Congress watered it down, delaying some rate increases and eliminating others. Which means while insurance rates are rising for coastal residents, it could be another 10 to 15 years before many of them are paying what the private industry would consider a rate that truly reflects their risk. There is no clear message telling coastal homeowners whether they should relocate. Sam Merrill, the coastal engineer with GEI Consulting, thinks that without some sort of action, eventually many homeowners will be left holding the bag when their homes simply cease to be worth anything. Or worse.
Generally, it's going to be bloody. The question is, can we help communities make it be a little bit less bloody? And I think so. None of the options are terribly good at this point. I mean, in many places, there's still whole communities there where, in fact, we may be past the point where anything makes financial sense.
Like millions of Americans in coastal areas, homeowners in Nahant have a really tough decision in front of them. Fight nature or give up your home. What you realize spending time in a place like Nahant is that none of their options are appealing or simple or cheap. It's the kind of situation that leads people to put off a real decision. But for people like those in Nahant who are struggling, there's also a deadline coming. It won't arrive suddenly, but it will arrive inevitably. For WBEZ, I'm Sam Evans Brown.
That story comes to us from WBEZ's Heat of the Moment series. For more of their stories about everyday life on a changing planet, head to our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.